things worth doing, it's worth forcing someone else to do it. Same goddamn people we were last week. I'm Ken Hanke, one of the Mountain Express movie critics.
We're always changing, Ken. You're not the same person you were last week.
I feel the same. I'm wearing the same shirt.
But weeks before that, you did not have that same shirt.
That's true. I did not. Therefore, I am the same person I was last week, but not the week before.
And I'm Justin Salner. I'm exactly the same.
Right down to the Mr. Rogers sweater.
Yes. It's cold in here.
Oh, I can't help that.
Neither can I.
Well.
And I'm Steve Chanifel, your producer, here, in case it comes up later. So let's talk about Cynic, because you were about
to actually... You're just that disembodied voice that people, you know, you're like the BBC announcer. Nobody gives a shit who you are.
I would be fine with that.
Okay. Well, Steve has the closest...
I would aspire to be a BBC announcer. That would be great.
Practice saying, winds light to variable. That's all you have to know how to say. Shall we?
I would love to...
What are we talking about?
We're going to talk about some
movie. Well, we still haven't finished. Did we say where we're at and all that shit?
Yeah, no. We didn't. Do you want to do that?
No.
All right.
I don't care where we are.
Yeah.
Cosmically, it doesn't matter where we are.
Mm-hmm. You're in the Carolina Asheville in the Cinema Lounge. Take my word for it. That's
okay.
Absolutely right. Where you are.
This is going to be the best podcast yet.
When you consider that...
If we ever get it started...
Before coming here, I was at a government meeting. Yeah, absolutely.
It's probably pretty lively compared to that.
I don't know. Cecil Bockwell had some things to say about retirement benefits, so... Okay, so do you want to start with Cinna? The de facto pick of the week?
Well, I don't know. Does somebody want to talk to me about that? You might ask me if I want to talk about it. Not really.
I don't want to talk about any of this shit, but we're going to have to.
I know. So
we can make it quick. Cinna, how was it?
It was good. It's good in a specific sort of way. I do think the idea that it doesn't matter whether you like Formula One racing or racing in general is probably pretty much bullshit, because it does have something to do with it. I at least know something about Formula One racing. And like I said in the review, I can at least name you some Formula One race car drivers, all of whom haven't raced for 30-odd years, but that's neither here nor there. Some of them longer ago than that. But nonetheless, I mean, the thing I find impressive, but possibly limiting about the film, is that it manages to be a docu-biography, and it does it completely with archival footage, without a narration and without any talking heads, and manages to tell a coherent story. That's pretty impressive in itself.
So, and just to kind of talk about the story of it, so it's Ayrton Senna, is it Ayrton, how do you say his name?
Ayrton.
Ayrton Senna, who was a Formula One racer who died young, I take it, early 30s?
34, yeah.
And this sort of tracks his rise, his rivalries, and his death?
Pretty much, yeah. And it's fairly straightforward. I have certain problems with aspects of it's not limited to this, it is limited to anything where you've got somebody who says God did this for him or God did that for him. I really, it's kind of like, okay, so what has God got against all the other drivers? Why didn't they get to win? How come you got to win? And where was your buddy when he crashed into that wall? You know, to me this is just a little bit like, no, I don't really think God cares who wins a Formula One race. I think that's ridiculous. And there's a certain amount of that in the film, but it's extremely well done for what it is. What I don't get behind it is I still don't really have a feel for who this guy was besides a race car driver who liked to drive really fast, was very competitive, was outspoken, liked fishing, came from a wealthy family, and channeled a lot of his money into children in poverty in Brazil, which there's an ungodly amount of. So, I mean, it seems like he was like pretty much a nice guy who died young, who was very good at what he did. But I don't know that much about him beyond that.
Do you work? Sounds like a lot of things.
Yeah, not really. I still don't really know what drove him. And I don't think anybody else does. And maybe that's a drawback. Maybe that's a problem.
So speaking of people that were young and vital and were good at what they did, tell me about Taylor Lautner in Abduction.
He's... Huh?
What?
He's not good at what he does, though.
No. Oh.
Steve is a liar. And a smartass. I don't appreciate that sort of talk. Abduction. Which I keep thinking of as abductor. Like, don't they sell those on late night TV? It's for your abs.
Ab crusher or something like that. They probably do. I don't watch late night
TV. I was trying to guess the over under of about 5 on how many times he took his shirt off in the movie before I saw it, and I took the over. Twice he takes his shirt off.
Only twice?
Yeah.
Does he keep it off?
Once he wakes up in somebody's lawn, passed out drunk, and the other time he just changes shirts, and this is all in the first 15 minutes.
He never takes his shirt off again?
Nope.
That's not going to help.
And you don't even see him from the front. You just see him.
This isn't going to help the Twilight crowd.
No. But it's still...
Come on, let's face it. This guy peaked as an actor in The Adventures of Shark Boy.
And he looks like a llama.
He does look like a llama. That's true. I have seen the proof.
Yes.
You sent it to me.
It's a picture of him next to a llama.
And they are almost identical. Yeah. So the llama's a little cuter. Hairier, but cuter.
It's better hair.
Yeah, better hair. And more of it.
So basically what you have is this dumb action movie, which I'm fine with dumb action movies, but there's a thin line between being dumb and entertaining and dumb and
not
stupid. This one's dumb and stupid.
A rare combination.
Yes. So you have this action movie where no one's ever abducted in this movie. Before or after the movie or during it, nobody gets abducted.
Well, maybe like you, they just thought people would see that ab and think, ooh,
I don't know what
shirtless Taylor.
But nobody gets abducted. The closest thing to abduction we get is a cell phone.
The cell phone gets abducted?
Yes. It's before the movie even starts. So nobody's abducted. They just have this dumb title in the stupid movie. Taylor Lautner's our hero. He finds out his parents aren't his real parents, and his real parents were CIA agents, and now Serbians are after him, basically, and he's on the run. And there's no blood in the movie, which is really confusing when people die. Because there's a scene towards the beginning where people will get shot with silenced pistols, and
I've seen people die without blood before, but
they get shot.
Oh, yeah, not when they got shot. No, I haven't seen that.
They get shot with these silenced pistols, and I thought they got shot with darts, and then it turns out they're dead. It was really confusing because I'm used to seeing, but it wasn't poison darts. It was guns. It was confusing, Ken.
That's what you say now.
Not even a little bit of blood.
So,
and it's mostly him just like roughhousing people with his big strong arms.
Manly.
And being hunky.
Hunky.
Steve knows all about those things.
That's right.
Yeah.
Steve is the ne plus ultra of manly and hunky.
Pretty much, yeah.
We knew that.
Yeah.
So we've heard rumors. There's talk.
So, John Singleton directed this.
Yes.
Without Taylor Lautner being in it, if he had had a different star, would this have been a better
film? No, because the script sucks.
Really?
And you can tell, like, Singleton's just sort of... I think he's bored. Because he tries to, like... He tries to make it interesting, like... wide-angle lenses and... moving the camera around, and then by the end of it, he stopped doing any of this stuff. Like, you can tell he is trying to get everything he can out of the stupid movie, and it's just not happening.
Did he do that same boredom shtick in Too Fast, Too Furious, 2 hours of my life I lost and will never get back? Or was it Torque I'm thinking of? It's all photographed in reflections. I think it's Torque. Which at least has the memorable dialogue exchange.
I never saw it.
Let's see, I'm not sure exactly how. I gotta get that bitch. I gotta get that bike. Damn right.
Huh. So So Sigourney Weaver and
they're fine. Alfred Molina.
Yeah.
Is he a Serbian?
No, he's a CIA agent. The Serbian's some guy I've seen play it. Serbian everything. He's probably as a Serbian.
Professional Serbian
impersonator.
I can't remember
what his name is.
There must be a call for that, you know? I bet he's in The Whistleblower.
Maybe. It's stupid and bad. There's a billion better action movies out there. There's two that are out right now.
Two out right now, yes. I was going to say. Three.
What's the third one?
Throw in Killer Elite. It's got to be better than this.
That's true.
Well, let's talk about that. So you saw Killer Elite.
Yeah.
And?
How was Clive Owen's mustache?
Clive Owen's mustache is dreadful. It's the worst mustache I have seen since that clip-on that W.C. Fields wore in silent movies. This is the mother.
Are you saying it's fake?
No, it's real, but boy, is it awful. I mean, you know, Clark Gable, William Powell, Adolph Monju, Errol Flynn, no, none of these come to mind. Even Freddie Mercury doesn't come to mind, and that's pretty bad, but your mustache looks worse than Freddie Mercury's.
Maybe he was hoping people wouldn't recognize him.
No, unfortunately they do.
And so, this film, for those who aren't familiar with it for some reason, is Clive Owen.
Why would you not
Jason
be familiar
Statham,
with this movie? What rock have you been living under?
And what's the premise of the film?
The premise of the film is to run around and shoot a bunch of people and have a bunch of exciting things happen.
Do any of them look like llamas?
No one looks like a llama, which is kind of a disappointment.
Do any of them feel up a teenage girl?
No, but I wouldn't put it past Jason Statham if he didn't think they were looking.
Or De Niro.
I could say something here, but that it would have to be edited
out.
Yeah, thank you. That's really, you went there for me. Thank you.
So.
Okay. Jason Statham's mentor, who is Robert De Niro, as we all have always suspected from his acting abilities,
should have been Pacino.
Has been kidnapped by some shake who, doesn't matter which shake he was. He's some shake.
Strawberry.
He's a strawberry shake, yes. And his son, Chocolate Shake. And the whole thing is that the shake, or chic, for those of us who insist on pronouncing it incorrectly, I think it's a brand of condom.
What are those?
A rubber.
Protestants
yes. Like, yes, you know, that's right. I forgot you all were mackerel.
Sin,
I forgot
I
you boys
them.
Were mackerel snappers. Okay. Now, listen to me. You want to know the plot of this stupid movie, you're going to have to listen to me.
Okay. Focus.
Anyway. No, don't say that. He has to execute the men responsible for the Sheikh Sheikh's sons' deaths.
The Sheikh and Sheikh.
Yeah, the Sheikh and Sheikh. And that's what Asheville needs. Anyway. Now, this is more complicated than it might sound because, first of all, he has to get a confession from them, and the confession has to be filmed or taped, and then you have to see that they've been killed. Well, after the first one, this super secret thug, Clive Owen, who is the dirty work man for this really super secret gang of otherwise upper class Englishmen who meet in a paneled room around a table and say a lot, trying to keep state secrets under wraps. Well, he smells a rat. He doesn't believe this man died in an accident. These things all have to look like accidents, too. That's the other thing. He thinks someone is out killing these ex-SAS men.
So what's the point of getting the confession, then?
Oh, to show the Sheik.
But doesn't the Sheik want them dead regardless?
He still wants to see them confess. I don't know why.
Okay.
I didn't write the damn thing.
I'm just wondering.
The Sheik is a complicated man.
That's right. And he's got a lot of crepe,
no mere plot
a lot of crepe hair on him, too, let me tell you. Doesn't look like it's really glued very well right about here.
So he's a crepe shape.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole concept. And then it becomes a battle of wills between Jason Statham and Clive Owen and Clive Owen's mustache. No, they do not arm wrestle at any point. I said wills, not arms.
But I want them to prove who's the manliest, and I know no other way besides arm wrestling. They can arm wrestle Taylor Lautner while they're at it. Over the top two.
Yes. Anyway, that's the plot. Over the movie the is fun. It's not weighty. It's enjoyable. Its biggest problem is it thinks it's more than fun.
It's based on a true story.
Yeah, right. So far removed from a true story by the time it made it into the film, I think it's... So
another movie based on a hard fact that came out this week, is Dolphin Tale.
It is a fact because the real dolphin's in it.
See?
Yeah.
See?
And I don't understand.
Which I'm disappointed they just didn't cut the tail off of the dolphin.
Is there a dolphin with a tail used in the earlier portion?
The Christian
Bale of
dolphins.
That's right. This is a method dolphin. And it's surprisingly not horrible.
That means Ken loved it, but he doesn't want to admit it.
No.
He cried a little.
No, I never actually cried. I did puddle up once or twice, but I never wept copiously over this. But
people don't know that Ken swam with dolphins when he lived in Florida every day.
What a fantasy life you must have.
He would ride on their backs.
I'm not getting near those things.
Free Willy is about Ken.
I always thought Free Willy was about a friendly street boy.
That's also about you.
Well, that may be. But that's another story altogether. Anyway, it's...
Ken won't eat tuna to this day.
Shut up. Because it's all very uplifting and heartwarming. And, boy, are you glad when Morgan Freeman enters the picture at the 63-minute mark, because he definitely does liven things up, because he's the first person to say anything witty or clever, because everything else is pretty utilitarian.
Jr.?
No, he doesn't. No, he's not witty.
The gravitas?
No, he doesn't. Or the charisma.
He looks like he has the waistline these days, though.
Well, I may have that, but that's neither here nor there.
It's Christopher Christopherson.
Then again, Ashley Judd, for the first time, looks like Winona. So, you know, this is not necessarily a good thing, but it's fine. It's not something that I would ever see again, but I didn't mind sitting through it.
So the premise basically is that a young dolphin gets its tail cut off in a blue
It doesn't actually get its tail cut off. It gets its tail caught in there. Now, if it just got its tail cut off, the whole thing would move a lot faster. But no, we have to go through, it gets his tail caught, his tail gets infected, his tail has to be amputated, it learns how to swim without the tail, but it's damaging its spine, so we have to get involved with friendly VA doctor Morgan Freeman so that he can create an artificial tail for the dolphin.
Okay.
That's pretty much the plot, yeah. 2 solid hours.
Boy, that sounds like it's almost as long as a baseball game. But that's a terrible transition. I'm sorry. But how was Moneyball?
Fine.
Yeah. Tell me about Moneyball.
Surely you have something more to say about it than fine.
Well, he asked me what I thought, and I told him. He didn't ask me. How was it? And
elaborate. Elucidate.
Well, before we get into that, though, I would. Like I say, I'm a little surprised at...
that I like baseball?
Yeah, you like baseball enough to actually talk about it.
You know, that actually, I tried to keep that from people, but he put it in the review, so I can't do it any longer.
I'm just saying that as someone who likes baseball, I still don't know who the hell this movie was made for. I've never read the book, but the whole movie feels like it would work better on the page than it would.
Well, let's be honest, though. Most baseball movies do not have an awful lot of time.
This isn't really a baseball movie.
But even movies that are baseball movies, that really qualify as baseball movies, do not spend an awful lot of time on the field.
Right.
But it sounds like this one spends less. This isn't a Field of Dreams, a Bull Durham,
a Major League.
Yeah.
A Little Big League.
Angels in the Outfield.
Angels.
Rookie of the Year.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Did you say Major League?
Or
Major League 2?
Major League 2 is the one I was thinking. As far as good baseball.
Alibi Ike, Elmer
Major
the Great.
League 3, Back to the Minors.
So it's not
I saw the
those.
Sandlot once.
Sandlot? I enjoyed the Sandlot as a kid. I don't know if I still would now.
Did we already say The Natural?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
The Natural.
Field of Queens? No, that's...
So it's yes. not like those films. It doesn't have
no.
anywhere
I mean,
near the baseball action.
No. And when we do end up with some baseball
Twilight?
Action... No.
Twilight has baseball action.
It does. It's true. There's about as much... No, there's a little bit more baseball than Twilight, if I remember correct.
But it's not nearly as funny.
No. Nevertheless. The movie is about baseball, but it's more about... It's more of an underdog story, a sort of way of subverting the system of baseball. They talk about... The movie's about Billy Bean, who's the general manager for the Oakland A's, and he didn't invent this system, but he was the first major league front office person to utilize it, which is using advanced statistics.
He didn't invent the Beanie Baby?
No.
Darn.
No. Basically, what the movie sets up is that baseball is full of people that are set in their ways and tradition, and trying anything else is sort of ridiculous. But since he has no choice because his team's so poor, they try something different. And it's enjoyable. It's a little long. It's a bit unfocused. I can't say I was ever completely bored with it, but...
Just partly bored.
Yeah. I mean, it's already sort of...
Mildly bored.
It's a movie... I don't know who they made it for, because it's not really for baseball fans. A lot of it's about statistics. And that's sort of interesting, but it's not something you make a whole movie about.
Does it benefit or hurt the film that it's got an Aaron Sorkin script?
I mean, it's fine. I think the script's fine. I don't have a problem with the script. Besides the really shoehorned in subplot with Brad Pitt as Billy Bean and his daughter. It's stupid. But I think the biggest problem isn't the script, it's more the direction. Which there's nothing really done with it. Like, there's nothing really inventive or exciting or interesting going on with the direction.
Well... Isn't this by the guy who made Capote?
Yes. I remember Capote being a bit...
Not lively comes to mind.
No. But I don't remember, like, it being this by the book, like... But I haven't seen Capote in 5 years, 6 years, whenever it came out, so...
That's 5 or 6 years,
So yeah. Moneyball's... I mean, there seems to be a lot of people that like this a lot better than I do... Fine. I mean,
you don't want to wrestle over it.
No. I'll forget I watched it in a few weeks.
I've forgotten you watched it now.
I think that's it for all the new reviews, right?
Is it?
Miss anything? So we got Cinna, Killer Elite, Moneyball, Abduction, and Dolphin Tale.
Yeah, we blazed through those.
So let's talk...
It took much less time than it did to sit through them.
So let's talk Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Coming up Thursday, Ken. What are we doing? Why don't you explain this whole
Oh, well, on Thursdays.
And also Tuesdays, so we don't have to come back to this.
Yeah, and we do it on Tuesdays, too, but with a different type of movie.
It's classier.
More tasteful. On Thursdays, in the cinema lounge at the Carolina,
or is King
which
called
is
the
where...
Lounge.
Which is where we famous are, even as we speak. At 8 o'clock, we show a horror movie. That's on Thursday. We show something better than a horror movie on Tuesday. Just remember that from when we get to that. That's not necessarily true. That's
better than a horror movie.
Yeah, well, other than a horror movie.
How many articles have you written about horror movies?
We don't
books?
Need to go over
and
all.
You're
going to
say better than a horror movie?
Yes, I am.
Someone should be angry at you. I don't know who.
They probably will be, and that's fine.
Classier than a horror movie.
Well, I find that to be a much more offensive way of looking at it. Anyway, we show a horror movie at 8 o'clock.
Older crowd.
And this week we are showing The Night Strangler, which is a sequel to The Night Stalker, which means it also stars Darren McGavin as Carl Kolchak and Simon Oakland as his newspaper editor, and pits Kolchak against some sort of supernatural phenomenon, in this case a 180-odd-year-old strangler who has been kept going on some sort of elixir vitae that he makes every 21 years, otherwise he just ages to death. It's fun, it's fast-paced, it's typical of its kind. If you know the Kolchak TV series or the other film, you'll know this one. It's a little bit better in some ways than the first one. It seems more sure of itself. It's funnier. It's got more clever guest stars like Wally Cox, Margaret Hamilton.
Production value.
Production value is about the same.
Okay. I just remember watching The Night Stalker and these scenes where he's driving around town, which is obviously the same scene of him driving around town, because his clothes keep changing whenever he gets out of the car. Which is fine. I mean, it's a TV movie.
Yeah, and this is a little more elaborate, and it got John Carradine in it. That's also a plus. And Joanne Flug, who was briefly popular because she played somebody in MASH, although most of her role got cut, but she was still remembered for that. I believe she's the woman that sleeps with the suicidal dentist. And this is not a great picture. It's a whole lot of fun, though. It's entertaining. It gets a lot of mileage out of Seattle's underground, which I think they take serious liberty with, because any pictures I've ever seen of Seattle's underground aren't nearly as elaborate as what we end up in. But, you know, it's cool in that respect. And it led to the television series, which was a nice, unusually good, clever horror TV series. There have been so few. So, you know, I mean, it's worth watching. It's fun. Fun is the word I would primarily use to describe it. If you like the first one, you'll like this one. Maybe a little bit better. What are we running this Tuesday?
Brazil, right?
The Terry Gilliam picture. Yes, right. I do believe that is correct. And what do you have to say about Brazil?
It's good.
It's such a chatterbox. Such a chatterbox. Do you have anything more to say about Brazil than it's good?
I've seen it once, and it's been a couple years, so I really don't feel like I'm up to properly critiquing this film.
I suspect this is a movie that Mr. Schanefeld possibly even has an opinion on.
I liked it a lot, Ken.
I liked it a lot.
It's very Terry Gilliam-esque.
Yes, it's very Gilliam-esque, but that, to me, is not necessarily...
Like The Metamorphosis is Kafka-esque.
Yes, it's very Kafka-esque.
Brazil is very Gilliam-esque.
But you see, in a way, that doesn't say anything to me, because I would not say that, say, The Fisher King or Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, neither of those strike me as being particularly Gilliam-esque, though he certainly made them.
Those two movies out of how many?
A certain number, you know, but I mean, they don't.
I did not say those were Gilliam-esque.
No, I know you didn't, but you seem to imply that if they are made by Terry Gilliam, they will necessarily be Gilliam-esque.
I did not imply that. I don't know where you're reading this from. In your review, you mentioned that it's his most
pain in the ass.
You say that we can get Marcy on here if you want. You say something about it being
I think it's his most accomplished film, with the possible exception of...
You say it's his most completely successful with Gilliam, or the most completely successful with Gilliam's Baroque cinema of the absurd.
It's like everything before Sean Connery and Time Bandits. It's that good, but for a whole movie.
Yeah, yeah. It that kind of describes it. I mean, it's The only thing of his, I think, that is as possibly as solidly good as The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. I think it is the most, probably the most dense, the most nightmarish, and the deepest of the films, although I would be hard-pressed exactly to say what it says, but it says it profoundly. I mean, as a depiction of a retro-futuristic fascist Great Britain, it's really hard to beat. And it's certainly gorgeous to look at.
So let's talk about the upcoming films.
What's coming up?
What is coming up?
Am I watching
here?
There you go.
Courageous?
Yes. If anybody's reviewing it, you are. Okay.
Thank God.
And you can,
do you think we can beat... How many comments does Fireproof have?
151, I looked.
So you think we can beat it?
Depends on how nasty you are.
What if I love it? What if I convert...
I'll be looking for your replacement.
Can that please be the poster for next week? Us as
I have to see the poster.
Okay, so let's run through. So 50-50
is the Cancer Buddy movie.
I guess, which so far sounds like it might be better than you would think it would be.
And in your case, this is kind of a 50-50 because you love Joseph Gordon-Levitt and you are apathetic about Seth Rogen. So this film may have a 50-50 success ratio for you.
Yeah, it does have perhaps a 50-50. And I don't know the director, so he's a completely unknown factor. He's made a couple films, neither of which made it to Asheville, and neither of which were things that struck me as necessary for me to track down. I mean, The Whackness and All the Boys Love Mandy Lane, neither of these sound like things I just need to see. So, it's a crapshoot.
So Courageous is coming out that's about Christian cops and some sort of...
And praying. Lots of praying.
Lots of praying. I guarantee you there's a lot of praying.
Well, they mentioned praying like 4 times
in the trailers.
Talking about, no, and I read about... When we decided to make this movie, we prayed and blah, 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 and prayed
some
more.
What's really funny is when I went to get the trailer off of YouTube, 75 people or something... had clicked dislike, and the comments were people taking the idea that if you dislike this movie, you hate God. And to me, this is just so completely out of proportion.
And so, for clarity, this is the guy from Sherwood Baptist Church?
Yes.
And what's his name? I can't remember. It's probably here.
Why did you have to say Alex Kendrick?
Okay. So, and he made Fireproof and some other films.
Facing the Giants.
Okay.
So that was first one was God and Football Coaches. The second one was God and Firemen.
This one's God and Cops.
This one's God and Cops.
What more American can you get than football, firefighters, and cops?
God knows, but I'm sure they'll come up with something.
God and cigarette manufacturers.
That'd be good.
Okay, so then we have Dreamhouse, which is a film that has some contention to it, sounds like.
Yes, but Dreamhouse also has... A director who normally is good will overlook the 50 Cent movie. It has Daniel Craig, it has Naomi Watts, it has Rachel Weisz, but it's also said that the film was taken away from director Jim Sheridan before it was over. At one point, the stars were talking about boycotting, talking about the film. I don't know if that was out of protest over Jim Sheridan. People are all a dither over the fact that the trailer gives away what they are certain is the big twist of the film, and apparently it's a twist that's given away at about the halfway point anyway, and is not the big twist. We'll find out whether or not that's bullshit. It has a poster which, as I've noted elsewhere, looks like a gag out of
Garden State.
Yeah, you know, the shirt that matches the wallpaper. Well, we have two little girls dressed in clothes that match the wallpaper, so they blend in.
Maybe there's somebody wallpapered over them.
Maybe they did. But nonetheless, I'm interested enough. I definitely want to see it.
As we're hearing, Senna does open on Friday, technically.
Right, yes.
And then we've got the
And you should mention Q-Fest, I assume.
Oh, yes, we should mention okay. Q-Fest.
Let's
yes.
talk about that in a second, then. So what's your number is the final film of this mainstream release this week?
Yes, that's yet another movie that will almost certainly waste the talents of Anna Faris. Don't you imagine?
Sure.
Well, you can find out for us.
Oh, am I watching two movies?
Oh, yeah. I think that's reasonable, yeah.
To drive all around town to watch this Christian piece of shit.
Well, the option is we're not going to review the Christian piece.
No, we're reviewing it.
Okay.
We're going to break 151.
Okay, then you're going to have to be really obnoxious.
And what's your number?
Don't you even need to watch it then? Can I just like, I didn't watch
no,
this,
you
but
have
I'm going
to
review
actually watch it.
And you know why I didn't watch it? Because I hate Jesus. You want to fight me? Comment.
Okay, so then we should talk briefly about Q-Fest.
And we'll put it under.
Yes, this is also the week that Q-Fest is being held at the Fine Arts starting on Thursday at 7 o'clock, and it is Asheville's first ever and supposedly first annual gay, lesbian, bi, transgender, queer film festival. And I've seen five of the films, and three of them I really liked. And one of them I was intrigued by and liked the guys in it. Not in that sense, I just liked them. I thought they were pleasant personalities. And one was a documentary, and it was fine, except that I didn't need 2 hours of country singer coming out of the closet. And the replica, Shelley Wright, is that her name?
I don't listen to country music.
Yeah, well, there you go. So that's kind of my problem, too. I mean, it was fine. It was just too long. It was more than I needed of that particular topic. Tim Tykwer's 3, I liked that pretty much. That was it's a German film. It's kind of like, it's more like his Perfume than it was like The International, which is probably a good thing. And the closing night film, Romeo's, I enjoyed that a lot. That actually had a lot more emotional resonance for me than anything else I saw. And the opening night film, Jamie and Jesse Are Not Together, is a lesbian love story, and it's very clever, it's very cute, and it's partly a musical, which was kind of a surprise because I wasn't expecting that. I mean, it was a pretty decent lineup. I mean, 5 out of 5, and I didn't hate any of them. And that's pretty good for film festival quality material, although The 3 movie is definitely a full professional film. It's, you know, got a solid budget behind it, which the others are obviously made somewhat on the cheap.
Okay, well, I think that's pretty much all we have for this week.
I'm done.
I'm done. I'm way done. I'm overdone.
Okay, so who are you guys?
Justin Souther.
I'm Ken Hankey.
And you are?
I'm Justin Souther.
Yeah.
Like
hey, let's keep up, Steve.
Have you forgotten who we are already? Shame on you. Yes, no, and we are the movie critics for the Mountain Express, who are the fine, fine, generous, warm-hearted people who make this possible and who allow us to usurp the services of...
For free.
Of our producer, coherer, Shanghai Steve, lump in the throat, Shanifer. I'm getting all misty. You better close now.